You're listening to the Refined Hippie Podcast, a show all about holistic lifestyle, nutrition, and plant-based veganism for a mind-body-spirit approach to living healthfully and happily for ourselves and our planet. Welcome, my lovely friend, to another episode. I am your host, Rebecca Henson. Get excited because today's episode is all about water. Seriously, I couldn't be more stoked to share this one. And many people might think, water, what is so special about that? Well, a lot. But before we get into it, I do have a coupon code for you to try out the delicious water that we're going to talk about. You can get 10% off at checkout if you use the code TRH10 at aqueenSprings.com for their silica source naturally sweet geothermal drinking water, which I was lucky enough to try before this interview, and I can wholeheartedly say that it was the most incredible water I have ever tasted. So I will put all of that information in the show notes, and you can just click directly from there. My guest today is Michael Hobson, the owner of the award-winning Aqueen Springs, and he has spent the last decade studying water in all its capacities, and his takeaways shed new light on not only what good water can do for our bodies, but also the importance of silica for our systems, especially as we age. We get into all things water, silica. We talk about his path to silica water because he has a very interesting backstory. We talk about his work involved in the music industry, structured water, how all water isn't created equal, the water quality in America, memory of water, municipal water, quartz crystals, so many topics. We get into it. So without further ado, here is my chat with Michael Hobson. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Rebecca, it's such a pleasure to be here with you today.
I am so excited to talk about water and silica and all the things. Before we get to that, I am very intrigued by your backstory. You have a very interesting, different careers that you've had. And tell us a little bit about your journey to where you are now.
Well, I like to say I've had a number of different lifetimes. That's the way it feels, to be honest. But I know others have had the same experience as me. And that is to say that when you look around in the place that you find yourself, after some period of time, and of course, earlier in life, you don't have as much perspective, hindsight. But as you look back, you start to see patterns. You start to see, oh, now I sort of see how, as the old saying goes, or the song goes, one thing leads to another, right? And so I think that's certainly true in my case, and I'll explain a little bit more, but I think everybody has that experience if they really look into it, that what comes out of that is the idea that this is not just a random walk. And that term random walk is an economics term because I'm trained as an economist originally, a mathematical economist specifically. And I spent some time after graduate school as a professor of economics and then went into corporate life and spent about 5 years at one of the largest companies in the world at the time, AT&T. The so-called old AT&T. We think of it as a wireless company now, but back in the day, it had 350,000 plus employees worldwide, and everything went on copper wires, more or less, right? And so from there, I left corporate life to start my first of now 13 businesses in the last 35 years. A high-end audio company in New York City called Hobson Ultimate Sound, 5 blocks from the old World Trade Center or the new Liberty Tower, depending on the decade that we're in. And that led me through a number of different businesses, many of which have to do with music and recording. I won't go into all the details there. People are interested. They can look up something called Classic Records and themusic.com and some of these other things that I was involved in. And then at some point, someone asked me a question. and it was after one of the successful businesses, right? They said, well, you know, so what's next? You're a so-called serial entrepreneur. And I don't, you know, label myself that way, but others have. And I think it's kind of madness, to be honest, that you can't focus on one thing for very long. And so I sort of humbly think of it that way. But in any event, someone said in an interview, and I wasn't anticipating it actually, said, so what's next? And without hesitation, I said, I don't know, but it has something to do with water. And to this moment, I still don't understand why I said that. Well, there must have been some direction, right?
Yeah.
From somewhere, subconscious or above, that had me say that. And so at that point, and I was still involved in a number of other businesses unrelated to water, I, you know, just started becoming more comfortable over time by saying, you know, by thinking about it or saying to people, I'm going to do something in water. I don't know what it is. And I really didn't look into things because, you know, I have children, I have businesses, I have things to do, right? And so one day I went on the internet and I looked into like this thing, water, right, on Google. And after about an hour, I walked away going, oh my God, I could spend the rest of my life in front of a screen looking at all things water. I mean, and this was 15 years ago, right? So like now, you know, I mean, the old joke is now everything in the world lives on YouTube and you could spend the rest of your life there. And so, but even 15 years ago, there was a lot on water and, you know, that's where the journey began. And it started with a guy called Gerald Pollack, which people probably know somewhat about if you're into water at all. If you don't, go on YouTube and take a look for Gerald Pollack. He's a very interesting guy, a good friend of mine, eminent professor in bioengineering, specializing in water at the University of Washington in Seattle. And I sort of struck up a friendship with him. I just called him up and said, I want to meet you. And so I flew up to Vancouver to a conference that he was presenting at of massage therapists. And I thought, oh my goodness, what's this got to do with water? Well, it turns out that, you know, massage therapy is all about muscles and muscle contraction and so forth. And it turns out Pollack's background is in muscles, right? And recognize that water, and in particular, something called structured water, which maybe we can talk a little bit about, is important in the firing or relaxation of muscles. And so that's what he was there presenting about. I got to meet him there. And, you know, I guess not to go on too much longer because all of this stuff in the past doesn't really matter to me. What's really more important is what's up now. But suffice it to say, working with Pollack and meeting an enormous number of different people over the last almost two decades. I was guided to a spring in southern Idaho that has some very special water. By the way, I'll just say that I think that there are other great waters in the world. But the fact of the matter is, and we can talk about this a little more, all waters are not created equal. And so, you know, we can talk a little bit more about that. And so here we are with a queen springs. A queen is a native term. It means peace, tranquility, clarity.
I love that. I love that name. Whenever I looked up your website and I saw, well, first off, I originally said it wrong. I think, yeah. I said, which I'm sure that's why you have it on your website, so people pronounce it the correct way. Because I was like, oh, okay. but going back to your comment about all water not being created equal, I think, I mean, it's becoming more common now that people are aware of this. But for the longest time, most people had this, I think in America at least, had this thought that we live in America, we live in a first world country, our water must be great, obviously. You know, it's third world countries that have nasty water and unfiltered water and parasites in it or whatever. So what is your comment to that?
Well, I think it's misguided. And the reason I say that is because just on the surface of it, look at some of the disasters that have happened here. In Flint, for example, and there are many, many, many other examples of those types of situations where there are contaminants in the water here, to the degree that it and by the way, as we all know, the bottled water business is huge and growing year over year here in the United States. And there are some issues around that as well. But I think it's in response to people recognizing, because of both of what they read, and I think, frankly, our bodies tell us when something's not good for us. Now, sometimes we override that, you know, with a bag of Doritos. But the point is, we know, I think, instinctively, I think our gut has a high level of intelligence. And so we know that that donut that tasted good in the mouth really doesn't feel so good in the stomach, right? And I think the same thing's true of water. I think people know instinctively having water that is not the best for them. We'll put it that way. And I like to say, and I don't want to mean to be critical at all of municipal water activities, because I think their focus is to provide an essential liquid for life that won't do any harm to you, right? That won't kill you, right? Yeah. And so they do a lot of treatment in order to, as you mentioned, kill bacteria and so forth. And I think that, of course, one of the things people don't realize is that, you know, all bacterias are not created equal either, that we are effectively, as human beings, mostly bacteria. Now, molecularly, we mostly water, but we have a lot of bacteria in us. And it turns out that, you know, obviously some bacteria is not good for us, E. coli and a good number of others, Streptococcus, that can be in water supplies and can adversely affect us. So municipal water supplies are heavily treated, and for that reason. And I think, frankly, there's a part of this story that people don't know yet. And that is that we think of bacteria as molecules, as things that have some level of life, right? And they get into you know, food stuff, they can get into water, and the effect is that they can make us ill, and in the worst possible outcome, they can kill us, right? But what I think people don't know is that the signals, and that means the song, if you will, of all of these molecules can also be present in water and can have more or less the same effect on us. And so we're going to find more and more as we go forward that drugs are going to be delivered as patterns in water. And so I think what happens, even when you filter out the molecules from water municipally, that the memory of water still exists in that situation. And then the question is there a way to get rid of that? And I think there is. We just don't know. We just haven't started practicing that yet because no one is aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the municipal water, I could talk on that for a while because I live on the coast.
Right.
And there are quite a few rivers, and recently it was discovered that DuPont chemical company was dumping a Gen X forever chemical in the water for years or decades, knowing that it could cause problems. And so they have put in a system here. I don't know how well it's filtering out, you know, the Gen X or whatnot. And then to your point, what is it? What else is it changing? I don't know, you know. But I mean, the water issue is obviously rampant. And bottled water, like you said, is not the answer. Although, and people are drinking that to no end, right? And then there's the microplastics, there's all the issues with that, which right. We could go down that rabbit hole.
Right. Right. And I think that really relates to, by the way, and I really want to just come back to again and reemphasize something for your listeners, that this Gen X that you're talking about, that if DuPont is, you know, dumping that, and of course there's a rich history, you know, the Erie Canal and some of the Great Lakes, you know, Lake Erie and so forth. There was a time where, you know, you could set that lake on fire pretty easily, right? And, you know, there's a lot of rivers that have been affected by what we call toxic waste, right? But I want to emphasize that it's not just the molecules of the effluent, if you will. It is the vibratory pattern of those molecules that water can retain. So even if you filter out the molecules, the effect of the molecules, the vibratory impact of the molecules is still there. So it can still have adverse effects on us, right?
Yeah, that's, I'm sure you're familiar with, the first time I learned about water in general having any type of vibration or different structure or whatnot was Dr. Emoto's book, The Hidden Messages of Water.
Right. Absolutely.
So fascinating. And a lot of times if you try to bring that up to some people, sometimes people are very curious and want to learn more. And then there's others that are like, what are you talking about? Like water, like having all these different patterns. It doesn't matter where it comes from. It doesn't matter, you know, what kind of intention you have towards it or whatnot. But obviously with his work, and I'm sure there's been others since him.
A lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot there. In fact, I would encourage people to look further into this. Again, go to the famous YouTube or even to the internet and put in the name Jacques Benveniste, right? And he was a French immunologist, and he was in conventional research and then came upon this phenomena where, and this is directly related to something called homeopathy, right? So homeopathic.
Yeah, that's it.
These are effectively water that has been diluted. It had originally in some kind of a plant normally, and then you shake it up, and then you take 1/10 of the amount out of the bottle, and you put it in 9/10 of another bottle, and you shake it again, and then you do those what are called dilutions, right? What he found out in doing some experiments, and he was looking at hearts, right? Not from human hearts, but different hearts from animals, that it's known that if you put, like, for example, a histamine into the heart, the blood vessels dilate, right? It's a vasodilator, right? What he found was that you could take the same histamines, put them into water, and go through this dilution process that I talked about, to the degree, by the way, and they do this 10 or 15 times, to the point that you're past something called Avogadro's number. And I won't go into the details of that, but put it this way, that after the 12th dilution, there is nothing of the original molecule in the water, right? It's all been diluted out, right? There's not even a single molecule left, right? And that's well understood. People could look into that as well. And what he found was that this water had the same exact impact on the heart.
What?
The histamine molecule. Yeah, it vasodilated the heart.
Wow.
So what's going on there?
And memory. It has a memory. It holds memory.
Hence came the idea that water holds memory. And now, then there was a huge controversy around this. He published a paper in Nature, and then Nature initially published it, and then they pulled back, and then they sent out a team, which was unprecedented, and they brought a magician along, the great Randy, who's not with us anymore. I'm not making this up. I promise you, you can go and look this all up. They came to his lab and they repeated the experiments and he got some results. And then the great Randy and the head of Nature and another scientist decided, well, let's just change the experiments. And for whatever reason, Benveniste went along with it. And of course, you change the experiment, you don't get the same outcome. Right. So they went away and retracted this famous paper of his that would have been monumental and discredited him. And he lost all his
fame.
Yeah.
Why? Like, I don't know what to what end? Like, what? Why would this stir things up so much in a negative way? You know,
that goes to one of the weaknesses in science. And that is that there's a resistance to new things. And one would, people think that that's antithetical, but it turns out to be true. And in fact, if you talk to a lot of scientists, they will acknowledge that if you try to do anything out of what is conventionally accepted, then you'll be rejected and ostracized. And quite often, you know,
it takes a while. Yeah, it takes decades for it to become. And by that time, there's different examples of that. Maybe the original one I was reading about my background is gut microbiome health, because I had a lot of issues with my digestion. And I think that was one of the doctors or scientists. And I mean, he basically died being discredited, and then eventually it was like the next generation. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. But so sad for them, you know. Ugh.
Science is littered, and I'm talking about for hundreds of years, with those examples. Right. Mm-hmm. Something that was initially violently rejected becoming the standard or the mainstream years later.
Yeah. And all their peers basically just ridiculing them and unfriending them.
That's part of the human condition, sadly.
I know. Right. It is a sad thing.
In any event, I'm sorry to get a little astray. It's really important for people to start to understand that water has the ability to store vibratory information. We'll just put it that way. And so that's both startling and then something to be concerned about. But at the same time, it's something that there's enormous opportunity in. Okay. And that leads me anyway to the part of this water, and we'll talk about silica and all of that. But a part of this water, I think, that is pretty special, and it relates to what I was talking about with municipal water. Part of the problem with municipal water is the treatment, right, and the memory of the treatment. But it's also, you could think of it as the water being traumatized, right? It's all these processes, and it's had all this noise, and it's been through all these pipes and so forth. And so it's you can think of it as confused and chaotic. Mm. And if you look, by the way, at Emoto's experiments, in addition to the really beautiful ones where he's, you know, held the glass and said, I love you, or put a sticker on the side that says love or, you know, praise or whatever, he's got the same types of experiments done with municipal waters. And when you look at the images that come from municipal waters, you will understand my comment about chaotic, right? That there's this chaos going on. And so in effect, if you're drinking something that's chaotic, you know, and it's vibratory in nature, what do you think it's going to do to you? It's like going into a room full of people who are screaming at each other.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do to your system? Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. Vibrations are vibrations.
Right.
Right. Patterns, we'll call them. Some people talk about frequencies. I talk more in terms of patterns or sets of frequencies, which you could think of as music. And there's music that's harmonic in nature and that makes us feel good. And there's music that may agitate us or raise us, excite us in some ways, right? And we're all familiar with those different genres of music. I think the same thing happens as above, so below in the human body. So my point is, we have this opportunity with the water from McQueen Springs, which comes from a very remote location in southern Idaho, where there's no agriculture. So there's no, glyphosate in the water. There's no agriculture, right? And so the water comes out of the ground. It doesn't get pumped. It just flows out of the ground at 139 degrees Fahrenheit. It's at what was a hot spring. And we capture it immediately before it's touched the atmosphere. And so when you open a bottle or a box of the water, it's never touched the atmosphere before that time. And so you could think of it in terms of a level of purity as something that is, we'll call it unadulterated, right? It hasn't, it's open. It hasn't had a lot of influence placed on it. And so the world I live in is one where I take a glass of the water and I think, form an image or a thought or something that I want to happen, I want to manifest. And I get that picture in my head. And well, I call it my head, that in my brain. And then I take that intention, thought, visual, and I push it into my heart, which we're capable of doing. You can, become aware of something in your heart. And then I speak that. And what is speech? Speech is a vibratory equivalent of a thought. And so that vibratory equivalent of my intention or my thought, whatever it is, gets translated into the water and is assisted by the fact that this water has a high silica content. And silica is the basis for quartz. And we all know about quartz crystals, or if we don't, we should go take a look at, again, to the great YouTube and search for Marcel Vogel. And Marcel Vogel was an IBM scientist in the 60s and 70s, and he started something called the Psychic Research Institute in the mid 70s, and he died, I think, in 93. But he worked mainly with crystals, but also with water. And he was encoding water and wine, for that matter, using intention put into a crystal and then circulating water around that crystal so that the water would take on that vibratory pattern of his intention, which is more or less what I was telling you about. So we have enormous power to affect our physicality, let's call it that, and our health and well-being in a way that is profound and is in addition to eating a wonderful diet. And let's not forget, most food is primarily water. Right?
Yeah.
So think about it in this context. Does it make any sense to say really nice things to your food? Does it make any sense to bless your food if it's got water in it and structured water, which can hold that vibratory pattern? You can eat your own blessing in the same way you can drink your own intention. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think and with the blessing of food, and a lot of people, times have changed and people aren't maybe as spiritual or religious as they used to be. And people used to pray every time before they had a meal, and now they don't anymore. And I'm not saying that's the cause of the chaos, but or anything, but all of this is connected, right?
certainly a contributor, I think, to be honest. I find myself these days in a world of not being in judgment of others. And so if you don't want to bless your food or speak to your water, you're welcome to do that. And I don't, think that that's something that's wrong that you're not doing. But you might as well give it a try.
Yeah. Well, and it's like everything, it's, knowledge is power. And if, learning about this type of research or this information, and people can take it with a grain of salt or whatever. And if they want to try it, like you said, then they can. If not, to each your own,
So, let's turn back to some of what people can probably cozy up to a little bit more effectively. And that is, some of the, what we call molecules in the water. The Queen Springs water is what's called lightly mineralized. And people can understand that by thinking about something called total dissolved solids, which is a number. And it's a number of parts per million. And so anything below about 250 parts per million of minerals is referred to as lightly mineralized. The Queen Spring is about 150 parts per million. You can have, by comparison, waters, and I've had some that are 6,000 or 8,000 parts per million. And it's like having a smoothie.
Oh my gosh.
They're so mineralized.
Wow.
It's like, oh my goodness. And it's quite an interesting thing. There's a whole part of the what we'll call the high-end water market where people pair waters now with food. And primarily it has to do with the mineral content. Right. And so I went to a water tasting dinner in Athens, Greece this past year. And it was a fine restaurant and had water sommeliers at it. And they paired each course with a different water in the same way they people do with
wine. Yeah.
And
I learned about that. There's a show called Down to Earth with Zac Efron, and he did a whole episode on water. And there's a place in LA that has water. I was like, I want to go there.
That's right. And the guy, Martin Rees is his name. He's a water sommelier that's part of this finest waters. I think you can find it online. Anyway, they have an event every year, and I was at that with Queen Springs Water and so forth. And so anyway, so lightly mineralized. And also has what's referred to as low surface tension, right? So all surface tension is a measure of fluids, right? So you can have a surface tension of oil, for example. Olive oil has a surface tension. Crude oil has a surface tension. Water has a surface tension. But with water, it can vary, as with other things. And so low surface tension water is more easily absorbed into the tissues. Okay. So think of high surface tension. The way to think of it in water is if you were to take a drop of water and drop it onto a surface, like maybe a slide, glass slide, think of it that way. Excuse me. If that ball of water, that drop was really round and really well-defined, that would be high surface tension, right? Because it's really well-defined. But on the other hand, if that water was like, a blob and it sort of, that's low surface tension. It's more amorphous, let's call it. So that's the way to think of it. And so in the body, low surface tension water is more easily absorbed, right? Now, fun fact, guess what most waters of companies that have familiar names that control the bottled water business, and I don't need to say them, people know who they are. And if you don't, go down the aisle at the grocery store and take a look and you'll know who I'm talking about. Most all of those waters are reverse osmosis waters. So they've been through a filtration process that literally strips everything out of them, almost no minerals. Sometimes they put some minerals back in, and that's what people refer to as electrolytes and so forth. But guess what? Reverse osmosis water has high surface tension,
right?
So guess what happens to most of that water that you drink?
Doesn't even get absorbed.
It's recycled. So maybe another reason to be careful about or thoughtful and look into the type of water that one drinks. And so that's another characteristic of the water that I think is important. And then we come to silica. So what is silica? Well, a couple of fun facts. One is that, and I'm going to digress just a second. If you go into the Earth's crust and look at minerals or elements, let's call them from the periodic table, the number one element in the Earth's crust, I didn't know this, but it's true, oxygen. Number two is silica. Number three, aluminum.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? So it turns out that that silica is a trace mineral that is very important. And this is well known scientifically. People can go and look it up. It's the basis for bones and teeth and hair and skin. It lodges in our veins and arteries and helps with blood flow. It helps with wound healing. It helps with clotting. So it's a pretty important trace mineral. And another fun fact is that we lose silica content in our body as we age. So it's not surprising, let's say, that elderly people have trouble with bones and hair and skin and teeth and blood flow and circulation and so
on. Thanks. Yeah.
So another understanding of why silica generally, right, is important for the human body. And what is another great source of silica besides drinking water that has silica in it? Fruits and vegetables, right? Because they're grown in the ground. And so now we start to get that connection that you're very acutely aware of, and a lot of people that come onto your program talk about with regard to diet and the fact that we really need, excuse me for my ignorance, is it 5 or 6 portions of vegetables a day?
Right. Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least. And I mean, the average American is barely even getting 1 or 2. You know, they're getting
right.
So many processed foods and
right.
Pizza doesn't count. Sorry.
Right. Exactly. But to your point, what you're advocating effectively, at least in part, has to do with silica and it's bioavailable in foodstuff. It turns out it's slightly easier for the body to absorb silica from water than it is from food, you know, by virtue of the fact that the gut has to extract that. But it's just good to both eat and drink silica-rich beverages or food, right? And I
yeah.
think fruit juices fall into that category as well, right?
Mm.
Carrot juice and celery juice and so forth. All the things that are proven to be good for you, and at least in part, that's the result of their silica content.
Yeah. Is it because of the water that we drink today versus, I don't know, 50 or 100 years ago, are we getting less silica, not just because we're not eating as many fruits and vegetables, but also because our water source often doesn't have as much in it? Or
yeah, I think that's probably true. Certainly that varies from place to place. But I mean, you know, I grew up in South Florida and we had well water.
Mm-hmm.
And had a high sulfur content. I mean, it stunk to high heaven. We had to have a tank, literally like a little baby. It's kind of like you'd call it a hot tub now, but we didn't use it for that purpose, where you'd pump the water out and it would degas.
Oh,
before
wild.
You, yeah, 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 yeah. And so, you know, it came out of the ground. So there was some silica content in it and so forth. But a lot of water, as I mentioned before, is reverse osmosis. And what do we do? Most under sink filters are reverse osmosis, RO filters. And so we're lulled into that sense. If there was any silica in municipal water, certainly if it goes through an RO system under your sink, not you're done.
Right? What if it has the added minerals back? Like it alkalizes it or whatnot, if it's RO and then it adds the minerals.
Well, so alkalization, it doesn't involve silica. And it usually involves bicarbonates, right? And so that's, by the way, another reason why these high pH waters, that's how they do it. They put them through reverse osmosis and then they add bicarbonates and it raises the alkalinity as a result of that chemically. And I always, you know, people ask me about alkalinity all the time. And a Queen Springs water is naturally 8.6. So 7 being neutral, it is on the alkaline side of the scale. But, you know, too much of a good thing is a bad thing, I like to say. And so, you know, if you get onto the alkaline train, you end up at drain cleaner, which is pH 14. So I urge people to be cautious about, you know, thinking that just because maybe alkaline water is better, that more alkalinity is even better. Right. So just be careful of that. A lot of that's marketing, you know, the 10 plus, the 11 plus. I've 11 and a half, and I'm just like, oh, geez, we're not far from drain cleaner here.
That's true. I never thought about it like that. So, I mean, if somebody did want to have something for their home, I mean, you know, you could supplement with a silica rich water, like, you know, a Queen. But then at home, like, what do people do then? You know, well, if you don't want to drink your tap water.
So there are, it's expensive, right? So let me back up just a second and tell you about silica. What does that really mean? So if silica itself is not an element, silicon is the element in the periodic table, if you go and look, and turns out that silicon is the prevalent element in the Earth's crust. But silicon does not like to exist on its own, right? It you can separate it out, but it doesn't. It's not stable in that environment. It likes to bond or commune with other elements, in particular with oxygen. And so what we call silica is actually silicon dioxide, right? It's SiO2. So it's a silicon molecule or atom with a couple of oxygens attached to it, right? And so the question is, how could you make silica-rich water at home? And the answer is you could buy silica dioxide, which comes in a liquid form. You can go on Amazon and look. It comes in, you know, quart size bottles or more. And one could, you know, make a witch's brew. You could supplement any water, by the way, with the silica dioxide. And people do that. And I think it's a valid approach if you haven't got any other way to do it, if one is so inclined to do so.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
So what are all the benefits of silica in general? Yeah, I mean, I know you mentioned a few.
As I mentioned, because it's important for bones and teeth and hair, if you want to maintain those and the strength of those, you know, over time, then, you know, silica is an important trace mineral that needs to be in our diet, right? As a result of those biological impacts. It's good for your hair. If you want your wounds to continue to heal, if you want nice puffy skin and so forth, if you want the effects of anti-aging and so forth.
Everybody then wants that. I mean, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So I would encourage people, you know, to be cognizant or aware of the silica in that they take into their body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned aluminum being the third in the Earth's crust.
Yeah.
And so silica helps reduce the aluminum toxicity in the body, right?
Correct. So it turns out, as fate would have it, right, as nature would have it, that silica and aluminum have an affinity for one another, right? And so it turns out that aluminum, not surprising to anyone, is toxic to plants, animals, and humans, right? Now, with regard to plants, what plants actually do is, because there's aluminum in the earth and they're connected to the earth and they're uptaking, minerals from the earth, they use silica that's in the earth to sequester the aluminum so that they don't become inflamed, right? So it's a way to kind of, encapsulate.
It's all meant to be.
Absolutely, right? Now, with humans and pets, if we have an adequate amount of silica in our diet, then the silica bonds to the aluminum molecule and gets excreted either through sweat or urination. So now there's another little aside there. It's like, is it good to exercise? Yes, at least in part, because we sweat. And so that process of sweating is in itself a detoxing approach. So, all of these saunas and the effects of saunas in terms of detoxing, the hot and the dry and so forth, saunas, if you're drinking and have a lot of silica in your body, because we do live in what's called the aluminum age, right? There's aluminum everywhere. It's in everything. It's hard to escape. And so what they found, and I think people are well aware of this now, is that some of the chronic inflammatory diseases that we generally develop or become more acute in old age, like Alzheimer's and ALS and a number of others, have a relationship with aluminum toxicity, right? What we're finding is that there's aluminum in the brain that ends up, causing dementia or is a participant in that activity. And the idea, of course, is that if we were to supplement the silica in our diets such that it wasn't so reduced, that we would have a chance of delaying or maybe offsetting the impacts of Alzheimer's. So another good reason I think people should be aware of silica and its benefits.
Absolutely. And I'd like to ask about the pets, because I noticed on your website, y'all do have a pet version. Is it slightly, is it different or is it just marketing?
It's no different. It's okay. No different. It's just a cute little paw print.
It does look adorable. I mean,
yeah. I mean, and look, people are really, concerned about the health and well-being.
Oh, more so than ever. People are loony about their pets these days. And I love it, but they're really...
Maybe even more so than themselves.
I mean, they're perfect little angels in our eyes, right? They're innocent. So you have to... More so than people. I mean, a lot of times I would rather be around animals than I would people. So,
unconditional love is hard to resist.
True. That,
right? And so if we can get it from human beings, it's great because they can talk. But animals give it in a different way.
They
so
definitely do.
Yeah. Got to take care of them so we can get that love.
Absolutely. And I'm like, okay, I got to get some silica in my kitty's water,
Yeah. No, I think that it definitely would be beneficial for animals as well to be cognizant of that.
Yeah. Could I, if I wanted to do the silicon dioxide method, I mean, that would be just the same. Like there's no, is there any downside to, can you get too much silica? You pee it out or like what, how does that work?
As far as we can tell, I don't think that there's any particular way that you can get too much. Now, people worry about silicosis, right? And I've had people be concerned about that. And it turns out
explain silicosis.
Yeah, silicosis is when silica particles get into the lungs and reduce lung function as a result. And so let's not forget that silica is the basis for microchips, right? Remember, that's why they call it Silicon Valley.
Oh, no, I did not know that. But
yeah, so it turns out that's yes, Right. So there are silica mines. In fact, there's a very famous one near Berkeley Springs, Virginia, that has it, effectively silica in the way we think of it is sand. Right.
Yeah,
so
right. That's what I think. Of when, yeah,
that's silica as well. That's a version of it, different size and so on. But, you know, highly refined silica is a powder, is a dust that is used in silicon wafers and so forth. And if you were breathing too much of that in a similar way that coal dust is probably not good for
probably
you.
Probably not good.
We know what happens from to coal miners. Right.
Right?
A similar thing can happen in that world. But as far as we know, I mean, look, everything in excess is bad for you.
Right. But who is going to be, how much water? First off, you would probably, if you were drinking too much silica rich water, you would probably die from drinking too much. You know, you can die from drinking too much water in general. So
absolutely.
Who would say that it was the silica or the, you being over hydrated or whatnot. So
I don't think that is something that people should be concerned about. But
just
I appreciate that. But let me just address something else that people might not be aware of, and that is, and it has to do with this idea that silica is used in semiconductors, right, in computer chips, and it turns out there's a way to think about the human body in terms of being a human computer, maybe the most perfect computer that we've conceived of yet, and that we do have systems in our body that conduct or semiconduct electricity. So I'm going to say something that's probably pretty controversial, but it turns out to be true, and that is we are electrical beings. We run on electricity. We are human batteries. And so I think the other issue around silica is in that transmission of electrical current, direct current throughout our body, that silica plays a role in that activity as well. And so, again, doesn't surprise me that in a situation of silica deficiency, that our memories aren't as good and motor skills aren't as good, which are all electrical impulses throughout this very intricate system inside of our body. So I think yet another reason, you know, to keep our computer chips, our biological computer chips in good working order.
Yeah. Everything's firing the way it should, you know?
Yeah. So the path of communication is open. The signal is strong. And again, we're back to signals in water, aided by silica, I think, in this, you know, biological supercomputer.
Mm-hmm. And I must say, your water is delicious. Thank you so much for sending me some. And I'm obsessed. It does taste, it says, I think it says on the box, doesn't it say sweet?
It says
geothermal. Yeah.
Yeah, we tried naturally sweet. And
it is. It's so wild. I mean, I tasted it compared to my, because I do have under my, we have an RO, but the alkaline, you know, because we were concerned about Gen X, but obviously my husband and I learned about how I was drinking RO, complete RO for years, you know, maybe like 5 or so years ago. And then I learned, oh, you're actually, you know, probably dehydrating yourself. It's like, oh, great.
Yeah, it turns out.
Darn it. We're like filling up at Whole Foods. Thinking we're doing the right thing, you know, and there's like, oh my gosh, like.
I mean, look, I had an RO system under my sink for the longest time. And, I think it's what everybody is led to believe, which is, oh, there's a bunch of bad things in water. And so it's polluted. And so let's just try and strip it all out and then we'll be safe. Right. But I've already kind of debunked that on one level. But, you know, you get this other problem of, OK, you've stripped out all this stuff and now you've got this high surface tension water that you end up urinating out. It's like, OK, well,
now what? Which is worse then, you know, getting all the contaminants or
it's hard to
know. I don't know. But so I did compare. I did a taste test because, like we were saying, I consider myself not like you, but I consider myself a water connoisseur of sorts. maybe an amateur. I don't know. I can taste the difference. Yeah. Some people can't, you know, they're like, it just tastes like water. I'm like, there's not, they're not all the same. Like,
well, but I mean,
your water was honest, delicious.
It's
delicious.
One of the reasons why people, the most popular beverages these days are flavored waters, right? Which of course is what sodas or colas were, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Now it's all these different, you know, flavored waters with,
high fructose corn syrup.
Well, yeah, quite often, or some gas, you know, CO2.
Oh, yeah, yeah, carbonation. So forth,
to give you that effervescent feel in your mouth and so forth. And I think quite often that's just to disguise this water that's like kind of bland. Like, why would you drink it? But I agree with you, and thank you for mentioning it. There is what we call in the water connoisseur world a mouth feel to this, and a leave or a taste that you can sense after you drink that water. And it's generally, it's a smooth kind of feeling in the mouth. And there's just this kind of strange, it's almost like, by the way, the difference between sweet and bitter is sometimes a pretty fine line. And somebody, a water sommelier I had lunch with a week ago or so, was drinking the water. And she said, you know, it tastes a little bit like butter lettuce. And I thought about it and I went, you know, you've got a point there. There's kind of a smoothness. And, you know, if people have had butter lettuce, it's kind of got, you could call it sweet.
Yeah.
It's
so
it's,
crisp. It's like crispy sweet. Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
So, yeah. I think it's widely recognized that women have better and more refined taste than men do in every way, by the way. I'll never forget a time I was used to be a big wine connoisseur. I've sort of, you know, gotten out of that now, but I was in Italy and we were at this commune, where the commune means that all these small local growers would bring their grapes there and they would, you know, get them and put them in vats and so forth. And actually they would mix and match the wines, and it was all women that would go to these different batches and taste it and so forth. And there were no men there doing the mixology. Yeah. Yeah, turns out, yeah, women's senses are more highly refined than men's.
Fine for that, yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, another note about your wonderful wine is, water. Sorry, I'm thinking about wine. I don't really even drink wine, but speaking of wine though, it does almost have legs. You know, like I had it in basically like a wine tumbler or whatever. And it almost, it was like, it has legs, you know, I was like swishing around.
Yes. Yes. And I would encourage people to do the following. This is a crazy thing. If you're a wine drinker, take a glass of wine, doesn't matter what it is. And, you know, applies to, inexpensive wines or very expensive wines. And in the glass, think about which way you naturally turn it. You know, when people like turn the wine right in the glass, you swish it. Some people turn anti-clockwise. Some people turn clockwise. And I would encourage people to do this experiment. Whichever way you turn naturally, start that way and then smell and taste the wine. Take a little taste and then do it the opposite way. Turn it the other way, smell and taste it. And I think you'll be shocked at what you discover. And I would encourage people to do the same thing with Queen Springs water. You'll be very surprised at what you taste. Something happens to water when you turn it. And some of the great water researchers of this past century, a guy called Victor Schauberger, if people want to look up that name, there are a number of books, understood that turning water changes its characteristics. And so we talked earlier about water memory. Water is basically the source of all life. It is a miraculous molecule that without which we wouldn't be here.
Exactly. I love it.
So there you go.
I love it. Thank you so much. I think I'm more obsessed with water now. As we all should be. It's not just, oh, I have to drink my water. You know, I have to get in so many glasses. You know, people in their minds think that's just what they're fixating on is how many cups they drink a day, you know. but there's
that's
much
the number
more
one
to
question
it.
That's the number one question I get when people, you know, what do you do? Oh, I've got this. Oh, how much water should I be drinking? And inevitably I turned around. I said, well, how much water are you drinking now? And they say, number one answer,
not enough.
And so the answer to that question is it really depends. And it depends on your body. It depends on the environment that you're in. Like if you live in the desert, you probably should drink more. If you exercise a lot, you should probably drink more. And let us never forget something that people should know about. And that is that we make water in our bodies, right? It turns out that there's a process, and you can look this up, called the electron transfer chain or mechanism, popularized and won Nobel Prize for by a guy called Albert St. George in 1937. And effectively it comes down to this process inside the cells where hydrogen, which is bound up in carbohydrates or fats, gets displaced and it meets another hydrogen and oxygen to form water, H2O, and put off heat. And that's how we heat our body. We make water inside of our bodies and we heat ourselves internally in so doing to maintain that delicate balance around 98.6 degrees or so. Right, with about a degree of either side of that. And it turns out, another fun fact, that the Earth does the same thing, that water is made in the Earth's crust. In fact, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that a Queen Springs water is what's called primary water. Because remember, the number one element in the Earth's crust, oxygen. What else is in the Earth's crust? A lot of other things besides silica, including hydrocarbons, which we most often pump out and put into our cars and so forth, and we won't go into that. But in the case where there's a geothermic area where there's heat applied to a hydrocarbon breaks the hydrocarbon into carbon and hydrogen. And hydrogen is like silicon. It doesn't like to be on its own. I call it a lonely bachelor, and it finds oxygen in the presence of heat and makes steam. That steam makes its way through the Earth's crust, picking up trace minerals, including silica. And it comes out of the ground at a Queen Springs location in southern Idaho in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
139 degrees as primary water.
That's so cool.
Go. Yeah.
Is the springs, I mean, is it like a little pond or like what?
Oh, no. No, it's it comes out of the side of it's at... That part of Idaho is what's called high desert. It's at about 7,000 feet. And then there are these big canyons that are carved down, I assume, from glaciers. I wasn't sure when that happened. But and so out of the side of the, well, you could call it a mountain, but it's really a ravine.
Hmm.
It just comes gushing out at 80 gallons a minute. And again, it's piped, and that's how it all happens. That's how the magic happens.
That is so cool.
Source of life. Yeah.
Well, it has been a pleasure. You are just a wealth of knowledge, obviously.
Lots of anecdotes, but I'm excited about water because of its potential for us to take back some of the superpowers that we have and not abdicate those to others in terms of our health and well-being. And I think that's what you're all about on your podcast. And I'm so grateful for what you do and the opportunity to be here with you and your listeners. And I think we have if people want to try the water, we have a promo code. Is that right?
Yes. I think it is. I will put it in the show notes, but I'm pretty sure it's TRH10.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is for the refined hippie. Or H10.
Yeah.
And that'll get you a 10% discount at checkout. And, if you're so inclined and, want to give it a try, we'd love to serve you.
Yeah. Well, I implore everyone listening to order some because not only is it delicious, but it's can heal all kinds of things. And
I encourage people again from the early part of our conversation to think good thoughts, have good thoughts about yourself, and to speak those to your water. And by the way, I think this works with all water, probably works better with a Queen Springs water and some other sacred waters than it does with tap water. But to be honest with you, I would really encourage people to just have those thoughts, great thoughts, beautiful thoughts, loving thoughts, and to speak those and then, you know, drink their own intention.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. Thank you so much.
All right. Great. Great to be here with you, Rebecca. All the best to everybody.
Okay. Till next time, peace and plants. As always, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. I learned so much. Be sure to share that episode with someone that you think could benefit from it. I think it is just packed full of all kinds of important information. If you did not take notes, I encourage you to go back and re-listen, write down some of the different scientists that Michael mentioned to kind of learn about their work. And water is just amazing. You know, a lot of times people will say, well, they just kind of discredit water. They think all water is just water is water. You know, it's just like they think air is air. But obviously, we know that that's not true. Air quality is different, just like water is different. But I think there's obviously even more to learn about water and all of its vibrational healing powers. So, again, thank you so much for joining me. You can learn all about Aquin Springs at aquinsprings.com and follow them on Instagram. And until next time, my lovely friend, peace and plants.